Meow. Meow, meow, meow.
Yeah, there's a character in this season that just meows. We're talking about X-Men, the animated season, series on three, part one. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are still going on X-March as we are marching through X-Men, the animated series, as we today cover the first 10 episodes of season three. And boy, does this one go places. But I need the Lady Deathstrike to my Wolverine. Miles, how are you, friend?
I'm good. I will say this has been an interesting ride so far, because there are certainly aspects of this show that I remember like one for one, and then there's times I'm like, I'm questioning, did I see this? Was this a fever dream? Like there is, especially this season's very odd, and I think it was more, I feel like it was more spaced out in reality when it was actually released, because I feel like there was a distance between the Phoenix Saga and the Dark Phoenix Saga.
Well, let's look. So the Phoenix Saga, first episode of the Phoenix Saga aired. Actually, September. The Phoenix Saga aired daily, September 5th, 6th,
that's right.
7th,
they did.
8th, and 9th.
Fox did do that when they had something like this. They would do something like that. I forgot about that. I think X-Men wasn't airing in the afternoon at that point, but they made a special week for this specific thing.
Yeah, so that was 1 week in September that they did that. And then in November 12th, actually the first two episodes were on November 12th, then the 19th and the 26th they aired the Dark Phoenix Saga.
Yeah, so maybe it just felt longer, but I guess it wasn't.
Well, I mean, September to November when you're, you know,
yeah, when you're 10.
When you're 10 is a little different than it is today.
That's true. That's a good point.
When I look up and realize it's already the 19th of March, and where did freaking March go?
No kidding. I feel like the month's just started. This is an odd season because it does have the two kind of capstone stories. Some of the most popular stories in the X-Men canon. Even your most casual like person who might know the X-Men probably has heard the word Phoenix.
Yeah.
Or Phoenix and Saga. It is one of those things like Venom. It's a known component. Like everyone knows that, you know, oh, Superman died. Batman got replaced. You know, these, even if they don't know the story, they know that something like that happened at some point in time.
And similarly, in the past, we have had a much more serialized experience in, at least in comparison to other cartoons at the time, when it comes to X-Men, yes, the animated series, especially when you look at season two and we had Magneto and Charles in the Savage Land for 5 minutes an episode, every episode. This season takes a little bit of a spin in that there are not as many like continuations, but there's a lot more multiple part episodes. The season opens up with the two-parter, then goes right into the five-part Phoenix Saga. And then
that two-parter feels like a prologue to the Phoenix Saga.
A little bit, yeah. But then, especially because it has the big coming soon Phoenix Saga.
What we find out is that ship is a Shi'ar ship, and like it's all connected.
But then we have a couple of standalone episodes before we get into another, we'll talk about this next season, another multiple part episode, and then another big multi-episode arc in the Dark Phoenix Saga. Spoiler warnings, they got through this thing is what I'm saying.
They did. I mean, and honestly, I like to tease, you know, how much exposition they use, and especially when they have a character who's like, you know, I thought about answering this, like, I am the podcastinator and I will do this, 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 and basically like detailing the power set that this character has to the young audience so that they can just kind of move forward. And even if sometimes I feel like it disrupts the narrative, because again, narrative wasn't, it was just now where a lot of shows were starting to mature its storytelling. You really see that more with the Batman series.
Yeah.
I think it perfects it more than any other one, and maybe Gargoyles at this time. But I do have to kind of applaud the show for, like, even if they were leaving stuff out, they just kind of barrel through these stories and take all the main components that, like, especially when we get to the Phoenix Saga, and it's all these crazy concepts that have to do with the Shi'ar Empire and their whole hierarchy and everything, and it just lays it out. There is no 10-month buildup to, like, revealing a Shi'ar helmet. It's like, nope. Boom. Shi'ar time.
Yeah.
And I kind of miss things that were that upfront about the story. It's not like we gotta tease Thanos for a freaking decade before you see that purple guy. It's like, nah, here they are.
Well, but on the other side,
I know. I'm just saying, I do appreciate the fact that it does just go for it, and that is something that I feel like has been lost in a lot of superhero adaptations, especially
if they were going to do the Phoenix Saga today in a TV show, we would get hints of the Phoenix's power for an entire season.
It depends. I mean, I think that would probably happen because that's how it happened in the comics. Like, the Phoenix was a very gradual thing. Like, especially the original Phoenix Saga is a little sloppy. It's not as well defined as the Dark Phoenix Saga, which has a purposeful, like, this is the start of it, this is the end of it. Whereas the Phoenix Saga is, it's a little messier. I'm sorry, but what were you going to say, Drew?
Oh, well, I was going to say that, you know, everything would be way too slow. And you're right about that. Like, we had like 7 movies to lead up to Thanos, or however many in the MCU.
Right, which I was fine with the way they told that specific story. But, like, it's not something that has to be done every single time.
Well, it's also a situation where, you know, Thanos is a little different because he's, I'm going to be 100% honest, he's got one good story, and they told that story, but they needed to lead up to that story. They couldn't just start with that story. Yeah, they had to lead up. Phoenix is, I mean, Jean Grey is a main character in the show, despite the fact that she has really a lot less screen time than I remember her having overall in this show.
I remember her being a major player, and she is background at best sometimes. Yeah,
a lot of the time. Cyclops gets a lot more screen time. Rogue gets a lot more screen time. But before we dive into the Phoenix Saga, I gotta say, Wolverine has terrible taste in women. Terrible, terrible taste.
This is the thing I've always disliked about the cartoon's pretty solid because they kind of seem to indicate that something maybe at one point went down between Jean and Logan.
I'm talking about Yuriko. I'm talking about Out of the Past, part 1 and 2, the first 2 episodes of the season.
Oh, I thought you were complaining about his love for Jean, because, I mean, I get sick of it too. Yuriko, and this is an example of them flat out telling you the story, but the story has too many layers for, honestly, I wouldn't have gone with this one. I know they wanted to use Lady Deathstrike, but Yuriko's story is, her and Logan's story is a soap opera in and of itself. And even, like, the 4 lines they dedicated to, like, giving you, like, that bit of information, it's still like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
And why?
She was with him back in the past. And her father is the one that came up with the way to put adamantium on his skeleton. Even though that dude was not the same guy, they are implying that it was in the cartoon continuity, at least. And now she's a full-on cyborg because she's teamed up with these dudes that are full-on cyborgs, including a goofy dude who's replaced his bottom torso with tank treads, and it's hilarious. That guy is so funny to me. And you've got a crashed ship in the subways of New York that has a weird Spirit Drinker, I think is the name of the entity that they never really fully explain, and they just kind of defeat it in a weird way that they hit it on the third rail of a subway track, which is, you know what? Applause for you guys for doing that. I'm with you here. I don't know. I remember that episode with Lady Deathstrike so vividly from childhood, and when watching it now, it's like, I don't know, gang. I don't know about this.
I remained excited because, I mean, I viciously read X-Men comics. As I say at the top of this challenge, you know, X-Men and Batman are kind of neck and neck for me, and always have been. So I remember thinking, oh, it was cool they were using this character, but at the same time, like, this one's pretty sloppy, and it's sloppy in a way that, like, they should have gone another route. Because they've already confused Logan's timeline enough as it is, to the casual observer, and adding in the time in Japan, it just doesn't help, because they seem to try to tie it in with Department H stuff, and it makes it worse.
Yeah,
and so the whole story is, you know, kind of sloppy. I do like, you know, Wolverine and Jubilee, because, like, especially, like, not long after her debut, like, Wolverine and Jubilee were like Batman and Robin. Like, she was always around. That's pretty accurate. I mean, she hung around Wolverine and Gambit, I mean, a lot in her early tenure at the school. So,
there's a wonderful scene later on in this season. I think it's actually episode 10. Where Wolverine is taking Jubilee out to learn how to drive, and it's just a very sweet scene.
It is really sweet, and then you hear him talk, and it's like, oh no. She's 15, I mean 17. That whole thing is creepy.
Yeah, super creepy, especially because they keep half the time Longshot is animated like he's supposed to be her age, and then the other half of the time he's animated like he's supposed to be a late 30s something adult, and it's like,
yeah, he's supposed to be like a Hasselhoff or something.
And then he's got the worst mullet in the history. Okay, anyway, let's get into the Phoenix Saga.
Okay,
because this, oh boy, they tell this story so fast, but they also tell it too fast, but they also don't tell it fast enough. Like, it's a weird trichotomy with me right now.
The Phoenix is, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's actually the complaint I've had about some of the Krakoan era stuff, because of editorial kind of repeating the same mistakes of 90s X-Men comics, where, like, everything was too integrated. And I think I mentioned this like 2 weeks ago too. You know, about to drop X-Men Red, because it was just too many moving parts. And then when it all comes together, oh man, this is a fantastic story. And yes, I'm glad I had all of that background, but, like, it took too much time, too many moving parts to go anywhere. It felt like it was moving at a glacial pace. And at the same time, the main story is chugging along, and that's kind of how this is going. Like, the Phoenix Saga told as the animated series, it's both sluggish and too quick.
So, yeah. So we start off this with the X-Men get, well, Professor X is starting to see things. That's pretty good, right? It's pretty good. Professor X getting Lalandra visions.
The Lalandra visions are good.
Was my impression good?
His cries escalate in this season. He adds this whole element of, like, rang to it that's really weird. Like, before it was like, oh, like this, like, but, like, he just added, I don't know, some sort of, like, theatrical sass to it. Yeah. I don't know what it was that was very distracting for me.
And meanwhile, anytime Jean Grey is under duress, I'll have what she's having.
Right.
Anyway.
But, oh yeah, because we have this whole situation where, you know, Xavier thinks that something's going on, because it's right after his like telepathic double, basically Onslaught story before the Onslaught story.
Was Onslaught a thing at this point?
No.
Interesting. Was this the spawning of Onslaught?
I mean, you gotta think that, like, that's gotta be part of it, right?
Maybe. I don't like the way that he justifies it. Like, so whatever. So we also have the introduction of Eric the Red, which Eric the Red has an absolutely wild Marvel Comics history.
Yes, he does.
Eric the Red was a character in Marvel Comics for a long time. And then this Shi'ar agent just decides when he comes to Earth that he's just going to steal this guy's whole look and vibe and name. And he looks exactly the same, completely different guy.
It's so weird.
But yeah, so they so something he does causes the dark things that everyone has, but we all suppress, which I don't like that, Charles. I don't like that, Charles.
No, I've always disliked how they do these kind of like dark side of Xavier stories. And I'm not talking about just like, oh, he's got a dark secret, because like at the turn of the century, like that was the constant thing, that Xavier had a dark secret.
Guess what? Charles Xavier is not a good guy. I'm going to say that right now. He's not a good guy. He may have done good things, but
and he may have good intentions.
And he may have good intentions. Not a good person. When your best friend is Magneto, you're not a good person. And that's especially gotten worse in the Krakoa era, when he's clearly keeping secrets from everybody and also wearing a giant X helmet, which is a look. X helmet and skin tight bodysuit. That is a look, Chuck. That is a look. Anyway. So yeah, it's basically, but this episode is basically just Dark Charles, who's wearing a cape also. He's got a cape on, which is just,
I love it. It's the dumbest. The fact that there's not an action figure of Dark Charles with the cape is honestly a travesty.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole story set of stories is very odd. It's very oddly played out. You can tell they're trying to set some things as breadcrumbs to lead up to the Phoenix Saga. And I like this idea that in the wake of all this, Xavier decides he needs to go to Muir Island to kind of work out whatever he needs to work out, or get to the bottom of what he's seeing.
Oh, well, don't forget the X-Men go to space in this episode. Like, or is that the first part? Is that the first part of part two?
Part two, I think.
Yeah, they go to space and they kidnap some astronauts, and there's a whole thing, and Jean almost dies when their space capsule.
Oh, maybe that is the first episode.
Yeah, it is, because he doesn't go into to Muir Island until after that. There was a lot in that first episode. But yeah, the X-Men go to space because they're trying to do something, because Charles says they need to, because Charles is saying a lot of things, but he doesn't know what he's saying. It's a weird thing. Is he hiding something, or does he just not know? Again, Professor X is a dark side. They go to space and they fight Eric the Red, and then when they crash down into the water, Jean, who has basically sacrificed herself to do this because she can control it telepathically, she starts talking about the Phoenix, and then bursts out of the water. And then she passes out, and then she's saved. And because of that, Charles is like, I got to get out of here. There's a lot going on, gang. I got to go.
Yeah. And I mean, I like that we get to Muir Island. I like that we get to see Banshee, who is an X-Men that I traditionally like, but his presentation here is something else.
It's so, so funny. It's so funny.
I do love the story that of Lelandra comes and visits Charles, and who then gets ambushed by Black Tom Cassidy and the Juggernaut. And this all happens so fast, by the way,
I had never put together that Black Tom Cassidy and Sean Cassidy were related, but you know.
Oh, yeah.
They're cousins in the comic, but they're brothers in the show. So
right.
Yeah.
Although Black Tom Cassidy and Juggernaut have often been best buds. Yeah. So I love that all this happens so fast that by the time Banshee and Moira get there, they think that he's just had an episode.
Yeah,
and I thought that was delivered like to perfection.
So funny. So funny. I also
I love that. And I just start gaslighting him. It's like, you didn't see anything.
I also love, this Banshee is the second vocal power person we've seen on this cartoon so far. The first one being Ruckus, who was one of Mr. Sinister's, those nasty boys. And his power was sort of like that was like that. But Banshee is just out here going, yo!
Yeah, because it's supposed to sound like a wailing banshee, I guess, but like at the same time I'm like, but you sound ridiculous. And I mean, the thing is, his power set really would sound ridiculous in real life. I would imagine it would. Like, I don't think vocal powers make you look cool. I think they're effective, but I think they're probably like, I bet they sound stupid.
I mean, they can be cool. Like, Black Bolt's powers are kind of cool, but
sure.
Well, you don't like the Inhumans, but
correct.
I don't blame you. But anyway, yeah. So we're in part three of this, and we're still on planet Earth, and we still have no idea what's going on, except that Lelandra is now on planet Earth, and Eric the Red is trying to kidnap her. And they finally, we've rescued Lelandra, who, by the way, I didn't realize was spider themed. Like, she's got, I don't know why, like all the Shi'ar have spiders on them, and I've never noticed the weird arm things coming off of Lelandra before.
Oh yeah, that's always been a thing with them.
I've just never noticed it.
The late 80s and early 90s loved messing with that kind of stuff. They love that design flourish.
And now we move on to episode 4, where we're finally in space. And who shows up? But the Starjammers! Bueno now! This is maybe my favorite episode of this arc. It is the one
that's a good one.
It's the most interesting things that are going on. It is moving things forward at a reasonable pace. It is explaining some things, but not explaining other things. We are told by Jean in a super hilarious fashion, because she reads Corsair's mind, Corsair, the leader of the Starjammers, who is a human, and she reads his mind and immediately learns that this dude is Cyclops's dad. Also, first appearance of Havok in the show as a child, but we don't even talk about him. That's not even a subject we broach. But the way she talks to Scott about it is, oh no, but I can't tell you. And then without missing a beat, and I imagine this is supposed to be something that we're hearing in her head, but they don't alter the vocal performance. So it just sounds like, I can't tell you that Corsair is your father. It's just like, come on.
It's really obnoxious.
I do, but on the other hand, I like the interactions that Corsair and Cyclops have in this episode. Yeah. I also think it's hilarious that Corsair is like, yeah, this dude killed my wife and I don't know where my children are. I'm from Earth, by the way. And I have reddish hair. and they make sure that Corsair does not know that Cyclops' name is Scott or Scott Summers, because immediately like, oh, you go by Corsair. What was your name on Earth? You know, oh, it was, you know, John Summers or whatever Corsair's name was. I actually don't know what his real name is. I just think that's very funny. I do think that Corsair's crew is hilarious. He's got a cat lady on his squad that only fights Rogue and only meows. That was in my intro to this episode, and I thought that was hilarious.
What's so wild is that character is a massive main character, and his like either girlfriend or wife.
They do kiss before he goes off on his potentially final mission. So
I starts with an H. I can't remember what her character's name actually is. It's like Hepzibah or something like that. I don't remember, but I have a special place in my heart for the Starjammers. I always have, but
they were the Guardians of the Galaxy before the Guardians of the Galaxy existed.
They were, and they also were the subject of a trilogy of X-Men novels that came out in the mid-90s. All three, I think, sold very well. I think it was by Michael Golden. And there was a two-pronged like story of like, oh, there's something going on in space, so one X-Men team needs to go help the Starjammers doing whatever's going on. Oh, and Magneto's attacking New York, so I need the other team of X-Men to go deal with that. And the whole trilogy kind of like, you know, Lord of the Rings. It's really, really fun. It's honestly like some of my favorite X-Men storytelling, at least in my kids' memory. But like,
I'm so sorry to pause you right here, Miles. I do have to clarify one thing, because this is the biggest weakness of this 5-part series. I know that the McCran crystal exists. Macron crystal. I know that Deken wants it, and I know that the Phoenix guards it and has possessed Jean. But I don't know how it works. I don't know what it does. I don't know what it's supposed to do. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the same deal with all of this stuff. The McCran crystal is not really explained. The Phoenix Force isn't really explained, because she's the guardian of creation and the guardian of the Macron crystal. This makes it sound like she's just supposed to guard the crystal, like she's the sorceress of Eternia. And that's not necessarily true. And even though the character acts as if she is both of those things, the guardian of creation and the Macron crystal, the narrative... a show very verbose in telling you all the details you need, does not tell you really what you need to know about the McCran crystal, the Phoenix, and its relationship to it.
We'll get to where that ends up from there. But should also mention, we also have the first real appearance of Gladiator in this episode. He appears as in a Mojoverse thing last season, but Gladiator, voiced by Richard Epcar, aka Bato from Ghost in the Shell and a bunch of stuff. This is not his first voice role, but it's pretty close to his first voice role, because he looks like he started doing voice stuff in in the mid 80s, but then moved on after that. Episode 5 of this, I really don't know what's going on. They're inside the crystal, they're fighting Deken, and a bunch of people are there, and I don't get what's going on. And then it's finally over. And it's like, I'll be honest, I was kind of falling asleep watching that one. They just didn't do a good enough job of explaining anything in it. I don't know.
Yeah, this one's tough. And I mean, it's why the Phoenix Saga is really more held up by the fact that the Dark Phoenix Saga exists. in the comics, a little bit less so. I mean, there is a lot of nonsense going on with
and,
that first
and,
story.
And I will say, I have not read the Phoenix Saga or the Dark Phoenix Saga in the comics, unlike a lot of other arcs that we are talking about in these episodes. I this is one that I'm just only passingly
familiar.
We'll
do a comic challenge, I think, this year, and I think the Dark Phoenix Saga should be part of it, because it's got some iconic covers, it's got some iconic moments, and honestly, really, really solid story.
And the Phoenix costume,
X-Men stuff.
Phoenix costume is a great costume.
It's a fantastic costume.
It's a fantastic
and,
costume.
I mean, I think it's half the reason they really wanted to do that, so they can put the Phoenix costume in animation. And I mean, there have been characters that have gone by Phoenix and used that costume. I think Rachel did in Excalibur for a good while. Mm. Yeah, but this thing is all over the place. You know, DeKen, Lalandra's brother, you know, gets the crystal, gets all the power. But allegedly, like, he starts is supposed to be creating worlds within this crystal that I guess will replace reality. And like, they managed to like bungle this in a way that DC has somehow never done, with as complicated as their little multiverses and interior worlds get. They do a better job explaining it. Here, it's like they say he's creating other worlds, but also he wants to destroy everything. And
even Lalandra is like, you know, this isn't going to save the Shi'ar Empire. Like, you're just going to destroy it. And it's like, I have power. I do love in this episode, however, because there's stuff going on and we start to see little cameos from other characters throughout Marvel. And we see a cameo from Doctor Strange. We see a flash to, I believe this is the X-Men animated series version of Sebastian Shaw and the White Queen, Emma Frost. You see this weird hand that's got like, it's red, but it's got like this, these lines all over it, just emerge out of a shot. And like, it does this sort of like an upside down, I love you sign language gesture. And then like this white stuff shoots out of it. Honestly, I love seeing Spider-Man just for a split second. It was great in this. They can't even show him for real. They only show him in shadow, and then his arm sticks out and it's like, oh yeah, Spider-Man. And then almost immediately after that, War Machine is there. I don't know why War Machine is there and not anybody else.
And it's the second time he's popped up in this show.
It is. Yeah, I don't know. Fun cameos, some of which will pay off later on in this season of the show. And then the day is saved, but unfortunately Jean has to protect the crystal and take it far away and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and she is gone. They never say that she's dead. They certainly imply it, at least until the end of the next episode.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think this one just suffers, but at the same time, and I do want to say this because I'm talking about this with a near 40-year-old, you know, modern read of this cartoon that came out in 1984 that was sophisticated for the time. And like, I was trying to get back to the point where of being a kid and being like excited to see like a comic book on the screen. Like, it's something we take for granted much more now, but like, there was a bunch of superhero cartoons in the aftermath of this and Batman, but like, it was still wild to see some of these characters on screen. And so I think there was a spectacle aspect of it that does kind of, despite the fact that the story is a little messy, it's still like a visually arresting thing for like a 10-year-old to watch,
I guess. And I don't know. I liked seeing like the cool, like, despite the fact that they look super dumb, like Yuriko's cyborg dudes with their weird whatever was going on, is a much more interesting thing for me to see at 10 years old than, because I'm going to be honest, the Shi'ar, they look kind of dumb. They look dumb.
They always have.
They always have. But they brought the 80s stylings to them to 1994. And I know that wasn't a huge span of time, but they didn't update anything about their look.
No,
and
it's always been kind of very Silverhawks. And
like DeKin has a 70s mustache the entire time. And they've got this weird hair.
We don't even get Deathbird here yet. So like just, you know, it gets worse. But no, I agree with you in terms of like what's more entertaining, but I still think if I turn this on, I'd still have been plenty entertained. Even if it was a little bit of like a weaker finish to a story that like, I mean, and people were excited about this because they knew like more than just kids were watching it, because in the first or second episode, it says like coming soon, the Phoenix Saga.
Yeah.
Like that was something they were promoting. And then the season kind of goes into kind of back to what it was doing before, where we get a handful of character episodes. We get one with Cyclops, who is still mourning Jean's death, but kind of acting like a jerk about it.
And then going and immediately,
canoodling with an old friend.
Yeah. So this episode was wild. So Scott, trying to reconnect with his roots and ground himself, goes back to the orphanage that he grew up in, where he felt a little ostracized because he was a mutant. And as it turns out, his old friend who used to be in there, who does not judge that he is a mutant, is also protecting mutant kids and helping them get adopted. The person that is adopting all these mutant kids, though, is Jebediah Kilgrave, the Purple Man, which I was like, wait. The Purple Man? Because I've only known the Purple Man as a Jessica Jones.
Yeah, in a
street level character,
like a Daredevil, like especially in the modern era, Jessica Jones, because he was even a major part of that. I think the Alias book as well. And you'd be right to be like, what's he doing here?
But yeah, I didn't realize he was that old of a character, to be honest. I assumed he was a much more recent character. But yeah, he's basically kidnapping these kids and using his powers to cause them to, like, the problem is, He ain't wrong with what he's saying. Like he's like a Magneto. He's like a mini Magneto. He wants to use like, weird that he needs to use these kids to do things when he could just walk into the governor's office and use his powers on the governor.
Yeah.
But we have an excuse to have a bunch of little kid mutants to do things like I forget the actual kid's name that has the fire powers, but.
Oh, it's like. Not Ralph or. It's some like basic kid name.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it is. What the kid's name is.
But then he's got his own little team of mini X-Men like Streaks and Boom Boom, which are awesome. And then
I love seeing Streaks and Boom Boom. I was happy about that.
Yeah, I'm assuming these are characters from other stuff.
Boom Boom is a major character in X-Force and New Mutants.
Interesting. But my favorite, and they don't. So it took me a second to click with this, because they don't use his superpowered person name. They just call him Taki, which is his real name. He has to have a real name. But this character has wheelchair transformation powers, which the way they say it is so funny.
The whole presentation of that is wild.
But this character is a character that I actually like a lot from the Krakoa era. He is WizKid. And he still has wheelchair transformation powers, except in the Krakoa era, he's using a red version of Professor X's hover wheelchair, and it's super cool.
Yes.
He works on the Sword Station, which is the space station that the mutants have kind of taken over. you know, it's a cool character, but it's a cool character that is finally cool after having decades of being kind of weird.
Right.
So yeah. And of course, but here's what I hate about this episode, because after all of this, they go back and they're having this memorial service for Jean. No, the memorial service at the beginning of the episode. Sorry. It's actually a really good memorial service, honestly. But then at the end of the episode, oh, she's alive. Like, we can't go one episode without her still being dead. You couldn't have that at the end of another episode. Like, I don't know. It's too much.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think this episode overall is pretty fun. For a Cyclops episode, who is often, I mean, and you even get like a Cyclops chance from where you're just like, dude, shut up.
Yeah.
Cyclops,
this show does Cyclops so dirty. He's so lame. I mean,
this show is why some people hated Cyclops for so long. We
talked about this, like in the comics, Cyclops is, you know, he's not always the coolest dude, but he's like, he's for the cause, you know? And in this, he's like, you better not hurt that policeman. Like, it's weird. Anyway, speaking of a lot going on, episode 9, Obsession. We have the return of Archangel. And I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I really like what they're doing with Archangel in this episode. I like it a lot. I like that they are making that one. They are making him obsessed with revenge on Apocalypse, and that because he was of the four horsemen, he was the horseman of war, and you can see how that is, or is it horseman of death? Yeah, you can see, you can see how he is still like affected by that, and how it has affected his consciousness and personality. And all that stuff is really, really interesting. And
yeah, I'm kind of so happy and surprised that they get this aspect right. And honestly, Angel and Apocalypse pop up a lot more than I remember them popping up, which is great.
Yeah, for sure.
But it is an aspect of Warren's character throughout the years. Because I mean, that story happens after he gets turned. Like, he is effed up, and he does go on a warpath trying to get revenge on Apocalypse. And it still, for a long time, it affects his personality.
And all of that is great. And I also love that they have Rogue, who touched him to steal his powers and turned blue and got some of his memories and experiences as part of that. Really kind of...
She took in some of the... controlling evil too.
Yeah, all of that is so cool. And then we spend half this episode in a weird ancient city with a friendly computer that Beast falls in love with, that I don't even know what's going on with this.
It's a weird story. I mean, it's not bad. Like, I can 100% see this sort of thing happening. Beast does seem to like get intellectually attracted to things frequently, but
it's also one of those things, like, everything they do, Apocalypse is just like, no, and then it just disappears. Like, oh, you guys didn't think that Apocalypse has had this ancient spaceship for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and maybe he's got some some stuff, fail saves. Like,
no, there is some silliness going on, but overall, still a very fun episode. Really good stuff about Angel, because even though they kind of solved the Apocalypse problem for now, it doesn't end things for Warren, and I like that, and I like that they're continuing to do, like, showing a character that has been traumatized by the past events is not something you see in a lot of Saturday morning cartoons. And this is done with Morph, it's done with Rogue, it's gonna do it with Jean, and it does it very well with Angel.
Like, and of course, Logan, we get a bunch of that stuff too, you know?
Right. And they do just a really, really good job of showing the mental toll that the adventuring or superheroing life can take on a character, especially given these circumstances. And I really love they thought to do that. It's not something I remember, even though there's parts of this episode that look familiar. I was honestly even with the silly AI beast, not love story, but just buddy moments. I thought that overall this episode was really good.
I did also love the idea that Beast had this backpack that had a visor, and the visor is what translated everything that he was doing on the screen. Like, that was a moment they didn't need to have, but why else would he be able to operate that computer is really interesting.
Right.
Really, like, we 75% there, 25%. What are we doing, gang? And now we're going to talk about the last episode that we have this episode, Long Shot, which is gonna be honest, not as strong as the last Long Shot episode.
Yeah, this is a weird one. I would imagine they did it because, you know, these characters, the Mojo stuff has always been kind of popular. And that first episode's really solid. This one's a little weird because, so Long Shot, and we still really have no context to who he actually is in terms of the nature of the show. He is running away from the Mojoverse. Mojo's back. They don't explain that. He's there. And who happens to help him? Jubilee, who has annoyed Wolverine so that he needs some time outside the car because he's teaching her how to drive, which
again, we talked about this earlier in the episode. Fantastic. Like the Wolverine Jubilee relationship is something that they don't get on to nearly as much as I remembered them doing, but I really, really appreciate it. And it's something that, like, you know, I understand why they used Rogue as that character in the early 2000s X-Men movies for the sidekick, you know, Bond relationship. But I don't know. I love that of all the people, you know, Jubilee should annoy Logan to the point that he does not want anything to do with her. But for some reason.
And that's what's so great about that character.
There are
two characters specifically that are not his blood that he treats. Well, there's several of them, but like that he treats like their blood. It's Jubilation Lee and Catherine Pride, like them his daughters.
and I guess that's true. That would have been Kitty Pride had she been in this show.
I mean, that's who that character was when she was introduced. I mean. Every so often they'll try to, try to have this like kind of entry character, whether it be Kitty Pride or, you know, welcome to the X-Men. We hope you survive the experience.
It ended up being Rogue in the X-Men Evolution show, I think.
Yeah, Rogue was a little bit more of a in-between character, but they also played a lot with her relationship with the Brotherhood of Mutants. So like she was kind of always going back and forth.
That was also post the movies where she was the main character.
They went all in on Rogue for some reason. I mean, I don't dislike Rogue. I'm a Rogue fan. I like Anne Paquin as Rogue. But I was always bummed that they did like my favorite characters kind of, you know, not wrong, but like they don't have a major part.
Yeah.
Jubilee's always been like already an X-Man and just hanging around.
Well, and that's the one thing about the show that I have to say. It's like it's the Xavier School for Gifted Children. They never have a class. The only child there is Jubilee. She's the only one ever there. Also, and this is something that I noticed in the Obsession episode, which is just so funny. Like they've got all this super high-tech stuff in the mansion. But it's not as later appearances like an underground complex that is like different from the actual house, like we would see in like the X-Men movies and stuff like that. It's just there, and there's just a window in the room. Well,
they do have that. They have that underground part where the Blackbird comes out of.
Right, but like there's just a lab where Archangel can just fly out of a window in the ceiling and just fly away. It's so wild. I have a question for you, Miles, and I can't believe it's three episodes into this that I'm asking this. Is Jubilee new to the cartoon, or did she make her first appearance in the comics?
Comics. She was kind of a new character at the time. I think she debuted in like 1990. I feel that's when she came out. It wasn't too far away.
I just wonder because
I'm sorry. Her first appearance was in Uncanny X-Men in 89.
Okay, so pretty close. With the show starting in 92.
But she was a relatively new character, and I think when Jim Lee was like redesigning it for the standalone X-Men title, that's where they kind of like decided to kind of stick with Jubilee as the character that she was.
Yeah. So and it works because like, you know, it could have been Kitty Pryde, the pride of the X-Men pilot, you know, definitely was Kitty Pryde in that. And
yes,
you know. But yeah, anyway, back to this episode. The Mojoverse is so weird and has stayed weird, and I still don't know what Longshot's powers are. He just has a glowy eye and then he fights people, but then he sometimes gets knocked down, so it's like his glowy eye doesn't always work. I do like this whole the Logan and the people earning Logan's respect through the course of the episode is something I will never get tired of. I really enjoy that.
Right. I love that too. My favorite moment in this entire episode is when, you know, Jubilee needs to make a distraction and does her best Storm impression, which is like, "Goddess of the pyrotechnics, I call to you." And it's so funny. And I was just like, I can't believe they nailed that joke. I really can't believe they stuck that one.
I also love that all of Mojo, this is back in the 90s, and when cartoons did not say kill, they would say that a character was gone, and, you know, or destroyed, or what did they always say in Dragon Ball Z? They went to the other dimension. I can't remember what they said.
Yeah, something like that.
In this, they use Mojo orders all of his people to cancel them because he's trying to cancel their show, and cancel them is their use of the word kill in this episode. Just works for me very, very much. I don't think it's as strong as the first Mojoverse episode, but I think it is pretty fun, even though, you know, I also love seeing the six-armed what is her name? It's not Shiva.
Spiral,
thank you.
I love her. I love her so much.
I just think she's an interesting character, and I feel like we've barely gotten to know her. I've seen her in other stuff in comics, but it's an interesting character that ends up, you know, has such a weird job in the Mojoverse. But yeah. So that is the first half of season two of X-Men the Animated Series. Excuse me, season three of X-Men the Animated Series.
A little bit more of a hodgepodge, certainly. There's some stuff that really works. There's some stuff that I feel kind of falls flat, you know, for its reputation. That said, I mean, I still think it's an entertaining X-Men show. It's still kind of taking a lot of boxes. There have been funny things I've noted about every episode, but every episode has at least had something where I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know. And I certainly see why this show was the success that it was.
Yeah. The animation quality seems to have gone up in a lot of scenes this season.
Really good, honestly. I am constantly kind of impressed by the animation here. And I mean, I'm certainly seeing, even if it's not always from the writing standpoint, I can definitely see why this show was such a hit just from the a production standpoint.
Yeah. And like there was
making action figures and stuff.
There was a scene in part two of the Phoenix Saga where Gambit is fighting somebody in the foreground and it's blurry and there's people in the background that are fighting, and you've got that sort of multiple levels of stuff going on. It's all really, really cool stuff. And I'm surprised with all these flashing lights that they had in these episodes that there were not epilepsy warnings on them. But that's a whole other thing. Anyway. So yeah, first half of season three. Some parts very strong, other parts maybe not as strong in the storytelling department for me personally. But we're gonna get right into it with next week. We're gonna finish out from episodes 11 to episodes 19. That's 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 episodes, including the Dark Phoenix Saga. So that's going
to
be it, Ken.
I am excited to get to that one because I do remember the Dark Phoenix Saga being really good. So we'll see if that holds up.
I think I remember more of the Dark Phoenix Saga than the Phoenix Saga because
100%.
Because I remember Sebastian Shaw being a part of it, like a big part of it. But I don't know. We're going to start things out though with Our good pal Bobby Drake making his first appearance, a classic X-Man making his first appearance in the show halfway through the third season. So that's going to be it next week, gang. If in the meantime you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com. That is where you can find this and every other episode of our show that we've done going back 12 plus years. So long that we have done this show. You can also tweet to us at TheMoreYouNerd, Facebook.com/TheMoreYouNerd, Blue Sky at TheMoreYouNerd if we ever actually post there. And of course, you can email us TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. That's TheMoreYouNerd@gmail.com. You can also check out our other show, Cosmic Crit, which is our actual play podcast about the Starfinder game, a tabletop RPG by Paizo. It's very fun. We've been doing that for a number of years. Of course, Miles and I are both player characters on that. But if you would like to go, if you'd like to go out to CosmicCrit.com, you can find the Cosmic Crit Discord, where there is the More You Nerd section where you can talk to me and Miles all day long because we're bored at work. So go do that. And gang, we will see you next time as we end the show, as we always do, with a rousing nerd.
Out. Do nerd for y'all.